Hello and welcome to another edition of this week's Politically Speaking podcast. I'm your host, Chris McDaniel, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio, and joining me today...
A still frigid Jason Rosenbaum of the St. Louis Beacon.
And...
Joe Manis, and I'm not frigid.
I'm pretty comfortable.
Either. I'm just pretty comfortable, weather-wise, of the St. Louis Beacon.
Now, guys, first, we have to get to this news. There is a campaign flyer that is taking the world by storm right now.
It's a sleigh flyer.
It's a sleigh flyer. It is all over the Twitter sphere, but not necessarily because of what's in the foreground.
Which is sleigh, Clay, Lacey Clay, some other top officials.
Yeah.
It's the.
But those people don't matter. Those people don't matter. What matters is our very own Jason Rosenbaum is in the background photobombing, basically.
Yes. And you know who else is in the background? Richard Callow, who apparently hates being photographed and things. And also Michael. And I'm pronouncing.
Slay's campaign manager.
I'm pronouncing his name wrong. Michael Globe of KTRS. And also Steve Englehart, Clay's. A spokesperson, but obviously I'm getting most of the attention because
you're front center.
And he's staring directly into his phone. Which...
That was election day in November, so I was very preoccupied on who was going to win the incredibly close battle between Lacey Clay and Robin Hamlin. He ended up winning by a very tight margin of like 70% to 30%. So I was very preoccupied
with that. We were on
top
of it.
Yeah, but a lot of people have noticed. Even our state senator Eric Schmidt, who's a Republican from Glendale, was tweeting.
Photobombing, B-A-U-M.
Yes.
It did get a lot of attention, but I don't know if it was as good as when I photobombed Bob Barker in 2007 when he came to the Missouri Capitol. But clearly this is the biggest issue in the race for mayor right now.
Well, it's what everybody's talking about and all the forums and everything like that. But yes, the mayoral, the Democratic primary for the mayoral race is on Tuesday. So there's just a few days left. Last night, there were two different forums. There was one that was put on by the Association of Black Journalists and one that Slay was at.
The Bosnian one?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and it appears that there will not be any more joint appearances. I think the last one will be the one that the radio station had about a week and a half ago.
No, it'll be the CAM forum where there was, you know, haiku and skateboarding
and
jumping jacks. None of those things actually happened.
Yes.
But we talked about that last week.
Now
I tried to push that out of my mind. I completely forgotten about that.
Yeah, I'm sure you were trying to push it out of your mind. It was a good event, though. I think it was memorable. I don't want to belittle
memorable.
It.
So.
One of the interesting things, I think, about this last week is that both candidates have been focusing more on issues.
Yes.
And usually, frankly, candidates usually do that at the beginning. And usually the last two or three weeks is when they're lobbing all these verbal bombs at each other.
Happened a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, but that had been happening from early January
on.
And then it seems like the last 10 days since this haiku form or whatever, they've been like Aldermanic President Lewis Reed has been putting out these position papers almost daily. He's put out three or four on different issues. Would have been nice if he'd put them out earlier in time for the Beacon's issues packages that we were doing. We did have his comments and had his, but he was much more in depth in these issues papers. At the same time, the mayor's had something on homelessness. He's had something on sustainability and some other things that he has mentioned during his campaign, but he was highlighting them to much more greater extent. And the point I'm getting at is that in Reed's case, it doesn't appear that his issues papers are going to be like on any TV ads or anything like that or radio spots. And for the mayor, most of his radio ads and TV spots have been more general. So you wonder how many people are even going to be aware of the issues that they're highlighting.
Has the mayor even put out a negative TV ad yet?
No, he's put out a negative flyer.
Oh, he's put out a ton of negative mailers.
And I think there are negative radio ads also.
because all the TV ads have been, you know, fairly warm and fuzzy on both sides.
Yes.
And I don't think there's a lot of time for them to really push out the negative stuff. So,
well, it's unclear if Reid was going to even have any TV, what they were telling me a few
days ago. Well, he spent $5,000 on TV ads for Charter.
Charter, yeah. But they were talking about whether or not they were going to do a final push.
Mm-hmm.
The last campaign reports, which I wrote about on Monday, the mayor had over $500,000 left in the bank, and Reid had about $97,000, and that was with a $6,000 debt.
Yeah, I wonder if he's even going to spend, the mayor's even going to spend all of that money, and whether he'll have enough afterwards. But maybe he will, just to make sure he gets over that final push. But it's hard to say.
Yeah, or who knows? He may, I mean, depending on what happens on Tuesday, the mayor, if he's gets the nomination, he may also use some of it for something else, like the arch tax or something.
Although they're not really scrambling for funds. No. They keep getting six-figure donations every day now. But that's a whole other issue.
The longest PAC name in the history of PACs.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't even remember what the name is, but it's long. Very
and we'll
long.
Be talking about that after next Tuesday.
It'll be the only game in
town.
Except there is one, I guess, aldermanic race where a Republican filed, but I mean, this is a Democratic town we're talking about, and unless it's the 12th or the 16th, it's not likely that a Republican is going to win an aldermanic race. But again, I'm getting kind of off topic.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of spirited aldermanic races, and without getting into them, the one interesting thing is that Antonio French, who's running for re-election in the 21st ward, a few days ago, Brad Kessler, who's a St. Louis lawyer who had run unsuccessfully for the sixth.
And for full disclosure, Brad Kessler is my second cousin. So
okay.
I want to be clear on
that. Yeah, so Jason's not going to talk about Brad. So I will. So he filed his complaint pointing out that on his affidavit that French had filed, French had checked that he did not have any outstanding fees or debts owed to the state or the city. Well, actually, he was still paying off a fine to the Missouri Ethics Commission for unrelated stuff, $8,000 altogether. Now, French says he wasn't misrepresenting anything because he had set up a payment program. So he's been making the payments on time. So he said there wasn't any – he wasn't like – there wasn't anything outstanding from the standpoint that he wasn't in arrears on anything. And but Kessler's complaint got the notice of the of the state election board, who basically gave French a week to pay off the rest. So he gave him a check just within the last day or two for the last $2,000, which was due Friday anyway. But he ties it somewhat to the whole – he's been a very active and visible player on behalf of Reid, and he ties this to the whole Reid-Slay race and believes that this all stemmed from Slay allies getting back at him.
Yeah. I let Joe handle that part of the story, by the way, just as another point.
But it just goes to show, regardless of what's true or not, how in politics, and this has always been, is that things bleed over into other races. And so you've got...
I don't know. And I think one thing that we'll look for more in general is whether any of these incumbents get ousted. There is one open seat in the 6th Ward between Damon Jones, Christine Ingrassia, and Michelle Whithouse, where there will be a new alder person there. But it remains to be seen whether any of the incumbents that are facing challengers are going to be unseated. I mean, it's really going to be a case-by-case basis. And I guess we'll find out in the next Politically Speaking podcast whether any of that occurred.
So. Yes. Yeah. But so the mayor's race has been the one attracting some of the attention, but there's a lot of other stuff going on.
Like today, I'm hearing that the Violence Against Women Act passed in the House today.
In the U.S. House, yes.
There's been a lot of contention between the House and the Senate over this bill. The Senate, and which is controlled by Democrats, wanted these provisions that protected Native Americans, and they had
LGBT
provisions also in there. You know, McCaskill has been very outspoken going after Republicans in the House for not taking up.
Yes, and here's the Missouri angle. So why are we talking about this national thing? It's because U.S. Senator Claire McCaskill, who had a big event last Friday with Jennifer Joyce, longtime circuit attorney for the city of St. Louis, and some suspect, likely candidate for something in a few years, McCaskill and Joyce were promoting the act and the funding it provides. And in the middle of that press conference, McCaskill did a little verbal jab of sorts at new U.S. House member Ann Wagner, who's a Republican from Baldwin, and noted that Wagner was president of the House Republicans in the U.S. House, and she's and
freshman. What do you mean by that?
Well, the freshman class.
Okay.
They elect a
she has a leadership position within the House in the freshman class.
Yeah. Right.
But continue.
Right, and so she's been like every time House Speaker Boehner is at a press conference, you see Ann Wagner right there prominently, and so. McCaskill, and something I've never seen in Missouri, says, you know, well, since Ann Wagner's is big, you know, she's president of that class, she ought to be, you know, talking all these Republicans into voting in favor of this. Now, this is something it's I cannot recall another time when that's done, when a U.S. senator has kind of did a little tweaking at a member of the House from the other party in the same state. They often... if they're from opposing parties, they often don't even acknowledge each other.
Right.
And Wagner and McCaskill have both been major players in Missouri politics since the late 90s. So it's not like they haven't known who each other are. But there has never been any public engagement of that for 14 years. Hmm. And then all of a sudden this happens. So today, the U.S. House passes the Democratic version, rejects the Republican version. Within 2 hours and probably less, Wagner puts out a statement saying that she had voted in favor of the act and she was really happy and that she supported the version that really helped people, I mean women, and she said the Democrats were playing politics. Now, what she's not saying is that what she voted for was the one that didn't pass.
Right, the Republican version.
Right, she didn't vote for the Democratic version.
That didn't include the Native American and LGBT provisions.
Correct. And then McCaskill puts out a statement that doesn't mention Wagner, but really jabs at the Republicans for their version and then features a video of herself on MSNBC promoting the act right before the vote. So here you have like kind of dueling versions of what was happening, and both by these two women figures, and it makes one wonder. We were talking about this before we went on the air about.
I don't know if the Politically Speaking podcast will be around in 2018 or 2016, but I mean, I can't peer into the motivations, but it seems like McCaskill sees Wagner as not necessarily a threat, but somebody who could be on the rise within the Missouri political hierarchy. I mean, first of all, she could raise a gazillion dollars. She showed that in 2012 when she basically cleared a primary field that could have been a crowded primary.
Correct.
She has, you know, national links with her role. I guess she was in the Republican National Committee leadership structure.
Yes, she was co-chair in the early 2000s before she was
she was also
Ambassador Luxembourg.
She also has that. Now, I don't know if she is going to be around to run for something else in any of those cycles. I mean, I don't want to go that far. But I mean, I think implicitly that could be part of it. But it could also be part of the fact that McCaskill wants this bill passed and she wanted Republicans to flip over.
Yeah, so. But normally you wouldn't mention, you wouldn't single somebody out. Now, if you go back to last summer, I wonder if it had anything to do with last summer when, okay, first, Ann Wagner is widely believed to have played a key role in persuading Todd Akin to run for the U.S. Senate, and then Ann Wagner ran for his seat. Okay, after Akin imploded with his legitimate rape comment in August, there was all this talk about, you know, pushing him out, putting somebody else in. Ann Wagner was on the short list of potential Republicans to replace him. And there was even talk, although she was careful and didn't say anything, there was talk about maybe even her and him doing a switch.
Yeah.
And so anyway, none of this happened.
No.
And of course, Akin ended up losing. But I still think that it is fascinating that, as I said, Wagner and McCaskill have both been very prominent players in Missouri politics since the late 1990s, but it's only been within the last week or so that there's actually been kind of a direct acknowledgement of each other, so to speak.
Whether there's a collision course between the two, I do think Wagner is somebody to watch over the next few years. I mean, first of all, she's going to probably help a lot of fellow Republicans both nationally and within the party probably more than Aiken did. Aiken had a reputation for not being very helpful toward other people. I'm sure you've heard that before. And I think that's probably going to endear her to many people. And also just her fundraising prowess and just her now more high-profile role as part of this leadership situation. I do think she'll be worth watching. And she also represents a big chunk of the St. Louis metro area. So that's also another feather in her proverbial cap,
well,
so to speak.
In fact, I'm pretty sure she is now McCaskill's congresswoman. I think McCaskill's house.
I believe
house
you're
Kirkwood.
Right. And she's also my grandfather's congresswoman. I've told her that 7 times now, and I'm sure she's sick of hearing that.
Well, let me say that she is an articulate. Both women are very articulate and very attractive candidates. And so they're both going to be women to watch, because there's been a lot of speculation of where McCaskill may end up in the next few years.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Missouri GOP.
Yes.
They have new leadership now. Shane Scholer is the executive director.
Yes, that was announced today.
And news. You might remember him from November. He was running for Secretary of State against Jason Kander. He, along with Ed Martin, they were both unsuccessful Republicans in that part of that
Scholer,
victory 2012.
Yes.
Scholer lost pretty narrowly.
Very narrowly.
It was a very close race. But he had been making kind of signals and overtures that he might run again in 2016. He put out like an email saying that to some effect. So it was clear that he wasn't leaving the political scene.
He's been very visible even after his loss. You know, he was even in Jefferson City for the voter ID bill.
Because that was one of his biggest things. So I do think, you know, the executive director, and I'm sure Joe can kind of carry on to this, does a lot of kind of the grunt work of making sure the party is running smoothly. And Scholer does have experience of working behind the scenes, both for now U.S. Senator Roy Blunt as well as Matt Blunt when he was Secretary of State. So he is kind of has that experience of working behind the scenes and kind of making sure all the trains run on time. So there's that. And actually, somebody pointed out to me today, he's actually the second unsuccessful Secretary of State candidate to become executive director of the Republican Party. John Hancock, who lost in 1992 in a stunning upset to Judy Moriarty, who was later impeached, and then to Becky Cook in 1996, was executive director from, I believe, 1997 to 2003.
So for your next trivia contest.
Yes. So there is something. And, you know, I think there's also going to be a lot of talk about, okay, you know, now Ed Martin and Shane Scholer, who both lost, are now in these two positions.
Right.
What does this say about the party? Well, I actually have a thought process that losing in a statewide race can actually be beneficial to somebody. If it happens only once, and if they kind of use that experience to correct their mistakes. The story I always like to point to is Blaine Lichtenmeyer in 2008. He lost fairly substantially in 2004 to Sarah Steelman when she ran for treasurer. He came back after 4 years of doing other things, and I believe used that experience to navigate through a Republican primary and then beat Judy Baker in a very contentious and contested race.
For the U.S. House in the 9th District.
So I do think that if Scholer or anybody else wants to run again in 2016, you know, they could use that experience not only to help themselves, but maybe to help the party push themselves in a better direction. But there's also instances where people lose once and, you know, never come back because of whatever reason. So I'm not saying it's a magical elixir. But I'm also saying that just because you lose once doesn't mean you're gone forever.
Well, I think it's also a signal, though, that the state Republican Party wants to have someone who is high profile and can do a lot more TV. Mm-hmm. Lloyd Smith, who'd been there for a number of years, who's executive director. Lloyd was also very good on TV, good on radio, good with the snappy comebacks. Shane Scholer, I think, will be in that same mode from the standpoint that he's a former legislator. He knows the issues. He can smoothly articulate stuff.
Yeah, I would say that as far as public speaking goes, he's actually a pretty effective public speaker.
Exactly. But what's fascinating to me is that the Republican – this is in line with – although there have been some exceptions. And the general rule, the Republican Party has had somebody at the top going back to Hancock who played that high-profile role. Now, when Ann Wagner was party chairman in the late 90s, and in the early 2000s, she was the chair, not the executive director, but she actually took on that role. But the of being the person who was on TV and articulating the complaints and the statements. And it's fascinating to me is that this is kind of what the state Republican Party is doing now. So they've got somebody like Scholer, who's maybe a little more of a cooler head on TV than Ed Martin, who often has some pretty fiery rhetoric. He's a great person to cover, but so that could be a kind of a yin and yang combination.
Right.
Yet on the Democratic side, their executive director is somebody that is not seen on the news.
And their chairman is Mike Sanders, who's the Jackson County executive, and we know right. from St. Louis County executives that those people are not the most universally popular people. He's seen as an up-and-comer as well.
Oh, yeah, and Sanders really good when he does TV and radio, and I enjoyed dealing with him at the Democratic convention. But the point I'm getting at is that on the Democratic side, it's not the executive director, it's the chairman, and then more importantly, the titular head of the party, which is the governor, who are the ones who are the face of the party, not the executive director. On the Republican side, it's going to be Ed Martin and Scholer. I think you're going to see kind of this duel as the head of the
party. And I'll just
point Tim Jones, though.
That's true.
He's definitely wrangling to do that.
And I will also
point out that the person that defeated Scholer was in the news a couple times. First of all, just a few minutes ago, he released the results of an early voting commission, which I'm sure will be looked at and debated in the next couple months.
Yes.
He also had a high-profile thing about going after a company, I guess, in the St. Louis area for unscrupulous business practices. But for journalists like us, the thing that really caught my attention was the release of a new website that archives audio from legislative debates. This is not only going to be nifty for people who love Missouri politics so much they want to listen to past legislative debates, but also for journalists who may not be there all the time or might have missed something on the floor. And I had a piece that the Candor's people probably saw that piece, like, how did this guy write a 900-word piece about something like that? It did get me wondering on whether that now that the Secretary of State is officially archiving audio, whether attorneys who are litigating legislation would use that as a way of determining legislative intent. I actually talked with Mike Wolf, Jane Duker, and Chuck Hatfield about this. And
three lawyers.
One of them, Wolf, who is the former Missouri Supreme Court judge, he basically said that while it's a great tool for people like us, it probably is not going to be very helpful in determining legislative intent because somebody could say something on the floor and say that they're doing something for X reason, but actually in an underhanded way trying to do something else. So they're really going to look at the bill's language more than what's said on the floor because of a whole bunch of factors that makes it somewhat unreliable. But it was a jumping off point for, I think, a fascinating legal discussion that probably caused three people around the state to say, oh, that's interesting.
But also it does highlight how Candor is paying on attention to some of these issues and what role the Secretary of State can play. So he may pay more of a visually activist role than Robin Carnahan did, at least for her second term, which segues into Democrat days this weekend in Hannibal. And Candor is the keynote speaker at the Saturday breakfast.
Yes. So Joe will be there. I will be in Little Rock, Arkansas at a bat mitzvah. Yes. I'm sure that's where you all expected me to be this weekend.
And I will be scrambling to finish my mayoral profile stories and also in Indianapolis for an NBA Pacers game.
Wow.
Yeah. The first one I've been to since Reggie Miller played the game like 13 years ago.
Well, as a lifelong Milwaukee Bucks fan, I hope that everybody on that team gets injured.
Wow.
So there's no photo bombing from either of you on the horizon.
I'm just kidding. I like a lot of the players on Indiana. They've been a perennially good team. I just do not like them at all.
Well, I'm from Indiana. My mother is a Pacers fanatic, so that's...
Well, maybe she'll be there.
Also, the Milwaukee Bucks this year are just dreadfully mediocre, so I have
they
no...
Are.
There's no reason why I should be talking trash. And Indiana, I think, is...
They're the second seed.
They're actually quite good.
In the Eastern Conference, yeah.
I could see them going very far. The Milwaukee Bucks will be lucky to make the playoffs. So I
well, thanks for listening
as we go off the air.
Well, thanks for listening to this NBA podcast. It's been really fun this week.
Nets.
My father was a basketball coach for 30 years in Indiana, so I do know basketball.
All right, well, we'll be back next week. We can talk about the results of the Democratic mayoral primary. You can follow me on Twitter at @CSMcDaniel. You can read my stories at stlpublicradio.org. You can follow Joe and Jason on Twitter at
Jay Rosenbaum.
And Jay Manis, that's JMANNIES.
You can read Joe and Jason's stories at stlbeacon.org. Joe and I are also going to be on Stay Tuned Tonight, which starts at 9
o'clock
on the 9 Network. 9.
Did you say I was going to be on?
I did not.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Because I'm not. I'm going to see Book of Mormon. Did I already say that?
I don't think so. So if you're only a Jason fan and you don't really care for Joe or I.
Stand then... outside the Fox.
No, but be sure to check in on that show. Joe and Chris will almost certainly do a wonderful job explaining the issues
almost
on a very
certainly.
Important election.
Yes, it is important.
And I always like being on that show. I'm sorry I'm missing it this time, but do tune in to see them if you hear this podcast by then.
Well, we'll be back next week. Until then, so long.
So long.
Tune in. Sorry, I seriously wasn't.